He's getting there.
I brought the
powerful
characters to make up the one I
missed. 90's okay. You have homework?
Yes.
We get extra credit for the Calvin Farms?
I apologize for the Calvin Farms. I wanted... It just that the class ran on after 9 last week, and I didn't want to make you stay too late.
I thought it was like a trick to make us go to libraries and stuff.
Basically, I mean, I wanted to use the computer and teach you it from the Abhidhamma Kosha, which is where kalpas are explained. There's like 6 different kinds of kalpas. But basically, it's almost immeasurable. I've seen somebody put an estimate on it as a couple, was it 400 billion or something?
432 billion.
Yeah, different people have different estimates. But what it is it's the time almost between... It's the time in which it takes a universe to be created and be destroyed. I mean, it's that long. It's the time it takes a sun to be born and then to die out. Yeah, roughly. I mean, it's much more complicated than that. And I wanted to do the whole thing with you, but it just didn't seem like... You guys seemed to be pretty burned out at 9:30 last week.
How does anybody know this?
Buddha is omniscient.
Is a Buddhist kalpa as a Hindu kalpa?
I don't know. But I'll tell you something. In that same chapter of the Abhidhamma Kosha, which is the end of the third chapter, he explains things which he could not have known. He explains subatomic particles. He goes down into like 8 levels of subatomic particles. Then he goes into light years. I mean, he explains light years. He explains the life of a star, the sun, you know, things like that. I mean, and this is in this is Vasubandhu. This is 300 AD, 400 AD. You know, quoting the Buddha. So it's incredible. In fact, they run out of words for the subatomic particles below the diameter of a flea's egg, and they start giving them silly names like quark, and you know, it's funny. You know, they start calling them sheep particle, horse particle, and on they say this particle is 1 trillionth of this particle. They go from those particles up to light years. Up to 10 to the 60th power, they have a different name for each number in the Abhidhamma. It's incredible. So yeah, it looks like the work of an omniscient being. Okay.
What are we going to read that?
That's about fourth year. Second half of the fourth year.
This was the unit of time that they talk about when they say at the end of this, the kalpa,
and
things will start to disintegrate.
Yeah, that's called a jiva kalpa. That's at the end of like 60 or 80 kalpas, you have a little kalpa where the world dissolves. The universe
is a whole kalpa.
No, not that easy.
No.
They give a number on
the
book.
Yeah.
Not.
Yeah. But we'll do kalpa someday. I apologize. Okay. We have to rush, or we won't. Or you'll have another question that you don't know on the next one.
Is it possible that, you know, maybe we would be willing to go a couple more minutes, and you just aren't aware of that, or you really don't want to go beyond that yourself?
He's trying to consider.
Well, I don't want him to walk around at night.
Right. I mean,
go on, but also I know that it's hard for me to sit in a class for more than 2 hours. It's easy to teach for 3-4 hours, but it's hard to sit. Okay, let's go. Please say chu.
Chu.
Kume.
Kume.
La.
La.
Lo dong.
Lo dong.
Tu.
Tu.
Drupa.
Drupa.
Che kyang.
Che kyang.
Dopa.
Dopa.
Senden.
Senden.
Nechik.
Nechik.
Nike.
Nike.
Okay. Tonight we're going to talk about dharma. Okay, what is the dharma? All right. What is a...
We got it here. Nim Sing.
By the way, you don't have to memorize this part or anything. It's just something I want you to know. It's not going to be on the quiz. This word you should know.
Is that already written somewhere?
Yeah, it's in the second line of page 16, same page.
Are you sure we don't have to write down the first one?
Absolutely sure.
I mean, you're not going to, like, translate
trick
it a little further
no,
on?
No, I'm going to explain it right now. But it's not something that I want you to memorize for next week or anything like that. I'll give you three short things to memorize. And it's not that. Okay, we talked last week about what?
The qualities of a lama.
Okay, and the point was that you should carefully examine a teacher before you let him mess around with your spiritual real estate, before you open your mind and let him tinker in ways that might permanently damage it. Check him out. Okay, don't just go to any teaching that you hear about. Don't just go to any initiation you hear about. Try to find out more about the person doing it. See if he matches up pretty well to those 10 qualities. Those 10 qualities were taught by who? Who said that a lama should have those 10 qualities?
A sangha.
Sangha. But remember that everything that a sangha wrote was what?
From the Buddha.
Maitreya dictated it to him. Okay? There's a big debate. In Western scholars, you have to put Maitreya / a sangha because you're not allowed to admit that Maitreya said it. Maitreya taught it. A sangha went to Maitreya's paradise, and Maitreya taught a sangha the five great books of a sangha. A sangha wrote the great books of the mind-only school, and then he wrote some great books at the Madhyamika school. Incredible. I mean, just incredible. He and his brother are responsible for about half the course.
Okay. Who's his brother?
His brother is Vasubandhu, who wrote the Abhidhamma Kosha. And they were sons of a nun who had a vision that if she married the king of that country, that she would have these twins, and they would become the two greatest Buddhist scholars of possibly all time, except for Nagarjuna-sama. But very interesting story. So she did. She didn't have any desire to give up her vows, but she saw that this would happen, and it did. An incredible book. So those qualifications of a lama are whose idea then? Maitreya, the Buddha. Buddha.
The future Buddha?
They say future Buddha. That was my debate assignment when I did my pre-Geshe exam in front of all the whole monastery. And the bottom line in that debate is that he is already a Buddha. And that's a long story. I won't tell you the whole debate. But in other words, the Buddha is describing to you the qualities that a good teacher should have. Those 10 qualities were prescribed by the Buddha himself. A Buddha himself, Maitreya. Okay. Now what naturally are we going to discuss? So that's the qualities of a teacher. Do not go to a Dharma teaching without checking out the teacher and finding out something about him, trying to see if he has some of those qualities or all of them. How about, what do you guess is going to come next?
Qualities of a student.
Good. Qualities of a student or?
Teacher.
Or the qualities of the teaching. And in fact, those are the two points we're going to cover tonight. Okay? So we're going to talk about Nyamsu.
Nyamsu.
Lanche.
Lanche.
Nyamsu.
Nyamsu.
Lanche.
Lanche.
Chu means what?
Dharma.
Dharma. Chu means Dharma. That last word means Dharma.
Chos.
Chu. Nyamsu Lanche means which you practice, which is to be practiced. A Dharma that you can practice.
Which Nyamsu Len is to, and which
Nyamsu
is to
Len means to put into practice. Cha means which is to be. Okay. A Dharma that you can put into practice. A Dharma that you can actually practice yourself. Nyamsu Len Cha means hands-on, practical, something you can do. The Dharma that you decide to make your daily practice. Okay. Nyamsu Lenje Chö.
Is that the Kyaltsepa Bunker's lam room? Similar to that?
In your sort hands? Of. Sort of. No, that's a little bit different.
It's different in your hands?
Yeah. Okay. That one's hard to translate. It's usually mistranslated. Mm. It means if you study with a good lama, he can just, you know, here, stick your hand out. He said, here's liberation. You know, you gotta catch it, though. No, that's what Munda Lakchan means. The title of that book is, it's not liberation in your hands, meaning that's your problem. know, it's in your hands. I don't care. It's...
No, I just thought it was interesting. You made it sound like this put into practice is like
you hold out your hand and along with it. There you go.
The liberation that he gives to you.
Yeah, it's into the palm of your
hand. He gives into your hand.
I don't know how to translate that, but it's like here, have it.
He puts it in your hand.
On a silver platter.
Yeah, like that. Yeah, on a silver platter would have been a good translation. Anyway, what is the what are the qualities that a good dharma should have? Okay, we defined it. An authentic teacher. Now we're going to define an authentic dharma. All right? And Kyalje Paboka says, "Chö" means what?
Dharma.
Okay. "Chö" means dharma. Kung means authoritative source, good source, real source. What do you call it? Authoritative or
authentic?
It refers to the source. The kung of a river is the snow on the mountain, for example. You say, where's the kum of this Ganges River? Oh, it's the snow up in those Himalayan mountains. That's where it flows from. So kum means the teacher, the source from which it has come. Kum me, I think Kali might know me.
It is not.
Right, or doesn't have. Sourceless, okay? Not having a good source. Me means not having a good source. You won't be quizzed on this. I just want you to see the sentence. It's a beautiful sentence. Kung me, la. La means what? All the words to, in, at, for, on. I mean, learn Tibetan, come on. They're all one word in Tibetan. La. Okay? La means
to.
You'll see what it means. Lo. Do you guys know what Losar is in Tibet?
Losar is New Year.
Yeah, Losar is New Year. So Lo means year and Sar means new. So Lo means year. Year. Dong is the dong in emptiness, same spelling, but this word has nothing to do with that. This is another word of the same spelling. It means 1,000. Okay. Lo Dong means 1,000 years. Du means four, F-O-R. Rupa in Sanskrit is Siddha. Siddhartas is Dunduk.
Sorry,
it means to practice. Practice.
Siddha?
Yeah. Siddha is the result of practice. Practiced. But this is the verb. Practice. That's Drukpa. I think that's the Druk for Bhutan. Drukpa Che. Che means to do. 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 So, if I tell you that Tibetan normally runs backwards from English, Laura, how will you guess to translate this line so far?
To do. Practice for 1,000 years of a dharma that has no authority.
Good, good, good. Nice. Okay? You can practice, you can try to practice for 1,000 years a dharma which has no source, okay? Which is not authoritative. Gyang, you can guess what gyang is.
But,
good. Nice, okay. But, we had Dokpa. It was a synonym for Lam.
Or idea.
Realization. We can call them the three principal paths, or we can call them the three principal Dokpa. Dokpa means realization.
Right.
Dokpa like is you've been meditating on renunciation, and suddenly one day you get up and you realize you don't need a single thing in this world. You know? That means nothing. None of it, you can use it, but you don't need any of it. You don't need one single thing in New York City. Nothing. Dokpa. That would be a Dokpa. Tsenden means authentic, real. Accurate, correct.
Tsenden means accurate?
Yeah. Real in the sense of accurate. Correct.
I think so.
You can come up with a dopa like that's not senden. A dopa that's not senden would be something like, oh, renunciation means I have to give up all my money today. And you go outside and you give away all your money. It's not what renunciation is. You can the Dalai Lama and the Panchen Lama were the two wealthiest people in Tibet, but they had renunciation. It doesn't refer to how much you have, it's what you think about it.
It's attached.
And the Dalai Lama used to say, one of the Dalai Lamas used to say, I only own my bell and my two ritual instruments. I don't own all the rest of this. I don't feel like it's mine. Okay. Tsenden. Ne chik means one sliver. Okay. One sliver. Chik means one. Ne means like a sliver.
Tiny, tiny piece.
Mike. You know what that means. Me is what? Ma, M sounds in Tibetan are always what?
Negative.
Also female.
Female.
I'm not making a joke. Not. Ke. Ke means develop. Get. Okay. To get or to develop. So, John, if you read it backwards, from the butt that Vilma supplied. you know, you could practice 1,000 years of Dharma that has no authority, has no source, no good source. But
you will not develop one sliver of correct realization.
Right. Okay. Impossible. And maybe you've had it happen to you. I don't know. I don't judge it. But if you've gone to some teaching, and if it was kume, and you really did honestly try to practice it, and nothing happened, it won't.
So this is this chew here is referring
to
the general
Dharma,
not the capital
of
Dharma.
Course.
Similarly, he was practicing without the blessing of Marpa. It was a real Dharma, but he had no blessing from Marpa, so nothing was happening. Remember?
Right.
It was a real Dharma.
Yeah.
But he had no empowerment, so nothing was happening, and then he wondered.
Well, maybe there was no kung because he didn't get the blessing.
One.
What's the translation of the second part there?
I see. But you won't develop a tiny one sliver of true realizations. If you don't, if you can practice for 1,000 years some Dharma, and you've tried it, you've had practices, you've gone to certain teachings in your life. There's certain non-Buddhist teachings that are just impossible. They don't work. And you try and you try and you try. People try their whole lives, and then they come to really depressed, and they say, just nothing happened. You know, after all these years, nothing happened. If nothing happens, then there's only two possibilities. The Dharma is defective. It's not a real Dharma. Or you're not practicing it. But if it's a real Dharma, and if you practice it, something's got to click. Some things have got to happen. Some things will happen.
So you're saying, and Milarepa perhaps is an example of this, no matter how heinous a person you are, no matter how much bad, obstructing karma you may have, sooner or later it has to give if you're practicing an authentic Dharma.
Yeah. If the Dharma is...
It's not like it's all building up and then in your next life you're going to come out like knowing everything.
No, not like that. And I say, try it. Just try it. You know? I claim that the Dharma you will learn is authentic. And then if you just try it, things will start happening. Then you will notice unusual things happen. Senden nechik mike. Then he says, in his next line, he says, man dene chisubadam dalyin. And I didn't write it up there. He says, and in Tibet, butter is a big, big deal. Okay, they live on butter. Vegetables don't grow up there very well. There's no bacteria. It's up high with this ultraviolet sunlight. You can keep butter outside for years, and it won't spoil. You can read. Well, it kind of spoils.
It's a little chewy after.
By the way, the yak is the bull. The yak is the male. So never say
so
yak
butter.
All right. So he says it's like if you wanted butter, and you put water into one of those Tibetan churns, and you sat there for 1,000 years, you know, and nothing will happen. No butter will ever come. It's impossible. And for a Tibetan, that example is very, you know, it's like driving a car with no gas, you know, sitting in the car for years. No gas. It's a very much a part of Tibetan culture. So what is a Nyamsa Lenje Cho? What is the Dharma that you should try to practice? What kind of Dharma should you try to practice? We're going to have three qualities. Okay? The three qualities are on your homework. And they probably are on your quiz.
And I'm going to shorten them. They're in the text.
Michael, has anybody taken the trouble to make some fonts for the PC, Tibetan fonts?
That's where these came from.
So those that's an independent font program that'll work with any word processor, or it has to
no,
be theirs?
No, it only works with word
programming. Oh. But somebody made some two-type fonts that work with everything. But
what
they
do
don't
you
quite
get
work yet.
They don't work yet?
He made a rough version and he went into a two-year retreat. Survey's waiting.
How far along is he in this retreat?
2 months or something.
So he gave up on his font making.
Well, maybe he's perfecting it there.
But maybe he went into the retreat because of his attempt to get more virtue before he could finish it.
This is the first quality, okay? If I were going to write it in Tibetan, it would look something. But don't worry about that.
Is this number one?
That's like number one.
We don't have to worry about the Tibetan.
No. That's like...
Yeah.
So please say, Dumba.
Dumba.
Sangye ki.
Sangye ki.
Sumba.
Sumba.
Dumba.
Dumba.
Sangye ki.
Sangye ki.
Sumba.
Sumba.
The first quality of a Nyamsa Lenje Che. Okay? First quality of a Nyamsa Lenje Che. And it's no... It's a very important point, you know? Do not... expose your mind, your precious mind, which is very plastic, you know, whatever you expose it to, it will take on that shape, to a Dharma, or a so-called Dharma, which is not, which doesn't have these three qualities. It's like poison. It's poison. And it will hurt you. Your mind takes on the quality of the Dharma that you think of. You know, you wouldn't expose your body to AIDS virus, blah, blah, blah. A bad Dharma can hurt you much, much worse. It can kill you for many lives. Yeah, however long that is. It's very, very serious. Your spiritual real estate is very fragile, very young, like a young bud, very sensitive, and easily poisoned. And you have to be very careful who you let fool around with your mind, your spiritual mind. So that teaching, you should check out what he's teaching. The first quality is that Dumba means what? It means the teacher, capital T. You know
teacher.
Who that is. The
Sangye?
Teacher.
Yeah. Sangye is the teacher.
Yep, that's Sangye. What's Sangye mean?
Buddha.
The teacher, the Buddha.
The teacher,
in our world, meaning Shakyamuni Buddha, or sometimes Maitreya Buddha, yeah? What's
the
that?
Teacher, comma, the Buddha, or the teacher, the Buddha?
Buddha, the teacher.
And Buddha, the teacher.
Okay. When we say Dumba in Tibetan, everybody knows what we're talking about. The teacher, capital T. Meaning, it doesn't even refer to your own Lama. It only refers to Shakyamuni Buddha. Normally. Dumba Sangye Ki means by him. Sumba means stated, said, spoken by the
spoken.
Which is by him?
The key is the by. So as in normal in Tibetan, we go backwards. That Nyamsa Lenje Chö, that Dharma which you allow yourself to practice, that Dharma which you give your precious lifetime to, the precious moments of your day that you have available for Dharma practice, which are very few, should have been stated by the Buddha, should have been taught by the Buddha. That eliminates, in my opinion, a hell of a lot of teachings, okay?
Yeah, there's so much out there.
No, there's a lot of weird stuff. People, you know, it's that Americans don't know. Americans are fresh in the Dharma. They're naive. They're innocent. There's like whole thousands of these guys over there. They come over. They dream of coming to America. And you know, letting loose with their latest philosophy, you know. And for whatever motivation, you know, I don't know. But eventually people like you will, I mean, people are becoming more sophisticated now. Americans are learning, oh yeah, well that's not Dharma. You know, that's obviously not Dharma. It's obviously you can't find that in ever spoken by the Buddha. That's just this guy's own idea.
Are you talking about Tibetans when you say these people coming over here?
Or I'm
people from India or?
I'm talking about Tibetans.
So there's Tibetans. Yeah.
People like you will get educated in what you will come to obviously learn is the Buddhism that the Buddha taught. And then you'll pick up one of those books and you'll say, you know, it sounds nice, but it's wrong. I never heard anything like that.
But
you will come to that.
Does that mean it's the sutras that's the only thing that he really...
I'm going to show you.
There's a book called What the Buddha Never Taught.
Really. And the time will come, you know. What will happen is those teachings, quote, will die out because they don't work. You know? They weren't taught by the Buddha.
There's always a fresh crop to replace it.
By the way, what is the quality of the Buddha? I mean... What? He's omniscient. He sees us right now. The Buddha 2,500 years ago, he has the quality of being here. He's absolutely here. He is here as much as you or I am. He's here all the time. And so do you have to update the Buddha, you know, or do you have to... omniscient being doesn't know what John Stillwell is going to be thinking 24 hours from now or what's appropriate for him. No. He's okay, don't worry. He knows what to teach. He knows what to do. You know, you don't have to worry about it. You know.
But the Dalai Lama has said that if modern science proves that something that was taught by the Buddha is correct, that you have to go with modern science.
But it won't.
Well, I think it already has in a couple of instances. It had to do with the cosmology or the reckoning of time. Somehow.
His Holiness is trying to
accommodate
Westerners, and he's learned to do that. But if you study the Abhidharma, which you will study cosmology. And it seems pretty weird. Well, there's this plate of gold, and under that there's a whirlwind, and the ocean lies on that gold. And you may think at that point, and I've heard His Holiness say, that cosmology seems to be wrong. When you reach Madhyamika and the teaching of the glass and the water, you guys had it, some of you, in the last, we had the teaching of, maybe you were there. Then you will see that that's cosmology is quite possible. You know, it's very interesting. He has to accommodate Western people. He can't go around saying, yes, the world is a two.
Actually, I think the remark was not directed at Westerners. It was directed at Tibetans.
Even more for them, who are exposed to science and don't understand Buddhism. So anyway,
well, it also presupposes carried in its extreme, if it's correct Western science, which is not always the case either. A lot of this stuff is theorizing and getting changed.
Well, the highest teachings of modern science, as I understand them, in the small...
Oh, confirm
I was,
a great deal of...
studied some physics and light theory recently and stuff like that, and it's quite...
Oh, exactly.
It's quite...
Western science is to say you got to drill holes
that,
in people.
That omniscience comes from understanding something very well so that you can know that past and that
now,
future.
There's a debate about it. She brought up a good point, and it's brought up in the Abhidharma question. They say, is the Buddha's omniscience simply a very incredible ability to extrapolate the future based on what he sees now and based on his incredible intellect? Does he deduce the future? No, he sees it directly. Okay? It's interesting. That point is debated.
Yeah, the concept of linear time is no longer there.
Yeah, he sees all time and all places in one moment. And more revolutionary, which you can't appreciate fully yet, is that he can see emptiness directly, and he can still experience normal objects directly, which is totally impossible for us. Okay, so Dhamma Sangyeki Sumba means the first quality of a dharma which you allow to enter your life and take up your precious time, is that the Buddha should have taught it. Okay. I'll give you some examples. I Xeroxed the table of contents of the canon. Okay. What do we have left that the Buddha said? Okay, just for your interest, okay? We're working on a project to input the whole thing on computer. And so there are 1,000 books left. If you want to be exact, it's 1,108. That are considered speech of the Buddha in Tibetan. Tibetan has the most of any other language. More of the Buddha's speech is preserved in Tibetan than in any other current language.
Now, does that mean Shakyamuni while he was here on Earth, or does it also mean like the Sangha speaking with Maitreya?
It also includes former Buddhas. The teachings of Maitreya, since he is only considered a Buddha in the secret teachings of Buddhism and not in the open teachings of Buddhism, were put into the commentaries, the human commentaries, which were not, I haven't got that to that yet.
And then the teachings of Tsongkhapa as dictated by a gentle voice, for instance, would be in
which
category?
Considered in the commentaries. Okay. What we have left of the 84,000 huge collections of teachings that the Buddha gave is called the Gangyur. The first Western people to ever come across these books came across them in East Tibet, and the Eastern Tibetans called them Ganjur. Like, hey, y'all doing? This is Buddha's speech. And so for all these years, Western scholars have mispronounced this word, Conjure. So if you see it spelled Conjure, you know why, okay? It's Conjure, okay? Ga means the word, okay? Gyur means translated. Why is it called that? It's translated from Sanskrit. It was originally written in Sanskrit, spoken in Sanskrit, and we have it in the translation. Okay, so the canon that we now have, what we have left of the Buddha's speech, the 1,100 books, which fits into 100 volumes, 100 big volumes. We have one down in New Jersey. That's what we have down in New Jersey. That's the Buddha's direct teaching by a Buddha.
Of all of the teachings of the Buddha, how many are speculated as lost? You know, there are 1,000 remaining extant, so I think they lost another 1,000.
There's a big discussion of it in the Abhidharma Kosha. You'll get there.
Oh, you mean there was 11,000 at the time of the Abhidharma Kosha? Or there's been some lost since then?
A lot lost since then. Yeah. Many, many lost since then. But even in the time of the Abhidharma Kosha, it was recognized that it was generally considered that you could say somewhere around 300,000-400,000
books,
texts.
And there's 1,000 left.
That's
There was a great massacre of Buddhism during the 8th, 9th century by Muslims who came to India. Every book was burned. Every monastery was destroyed.
Wow.
There is no Buddhism left in India because of that.
Now, is that a dharma that did that, or was that would-be dharma that did that?
Okay, Gangyur, okay? The general structure of the Gangyur, I'll just read it to you. You don't have to know that. It's not on you. But just so you know the kind of books that are in the Gangyur. The first section of the Gangyur is called Dulla, which means Vinaya. And that's the whole section on vowed morality. There are 8 different types of vows that a person can take. And that whole first section of the Gangyur is devoted to vowed morality. That will be the last subject that you study in the 5-year course. No, because by then you're going to be a monk or a nun, actually. No, you don't have to be. You can take lifetime layman's vows, 5 vows, which everybody should take by then. And then you're allowed to study it. So I couldn't teach you that at the beginning. So that's Vinaya. The next category is the perfection of wisdom. And those are those really famous sutras about emptiness. You've heard a lot of those.
Pranayana Paramita?
Yeah.
I need to ask you a question.
Dolwa is the name of the first section.
Right.
Vinaya is the name of the
Is the Sanskrit translation of Dolwa. Dolwa is Tibetan word.
Oh, okay.
And Vinaya is the Sanskrit word. The Tibetans translated the word Vinaya as Dolwa, meaning that which tames you, that which controls you. It's the same word as this first quality that we had for Alama.
And also, did you say, you said the 1,100 books, 100 volumes.
Yes.
What is left of the canon?
Of the Buddha's speech, the Buddha's own speech. The speech of an enlightened being. We only have left 1,100 books.
I don't
know. Well, I mean, it's probably more than that. If you want to know, it's the amount of scriptures you could write with the ink that could be carried on the back of the elephant of Indra, who can carry like tons. And that's the actual measurement.
So where do we get the 108 sutras from? Those are a special subcategory? I thought there was 108 sutras.
Well, that's what I'm getting to next. Next, there are three sections of sutras. They're basically the sutra sections.
This is the third section.
Yeah, there's more sections than that, but I'm just trying to abbreviate it for you. The next three sections are all basically basic sutras. Sutra means
sutta?
A teaching of the Buddha, which is not secret. A teaching by the Buddha himself, which is not secret. By the way, in the second or third course, you will study these things very, very deeply. You'll go into them very deeply. What is the Buddha's teaching? So Buddha goes like that to a student, is it the Buddha's word? You know, can the Buddha pretend to be a tree and teach you something by whispering a certain way in the wind? He can, and he will, and he does. It's very interesting. And you will study all those sections of the way he can teach people. It's in the Perfection of Wisdom, which we will study in the second and third. Okay. The next section, and I'll call it the final section, is the Tantras. Tantra means a secret teaching given directly by the Buddha.
Is the three vehicles? Is that three vehicles?
No, that's a different thing. Tantra, you can divide the whole speech of the Buddha into the open speech, which anyone can study, and then the secret speech, which you need permission to study, and what else do you need to study?
Wang.
Nah. Give me a good answer.
Wong?
What do you need to study Tantra? Lamsa Lamsa. Trying to practice Tantra without Lamsa Lamsa is at best nothing happens, and normally a big disaster. Something very bad will happen to you. You will screw up your spiritual real estate for thousands of years.
So you can get Wong without Lamsa Lamsa? Is that what you said?
What is wrong?
Yeah, you could go to initiation and try to take an initiation without having Lamsa Namsa, and at best, nothing would happen. At worst, you'd have some real disasters.
So what you mean, when you say is somebody can get an empowerment...
They wouldn't get the empowerment. They would sit in the empowerment, and everyone would say John Stillwell was at the Kala Chakra. But he didn't...
But he couldn't pry the book open and...
Nothing would happen in his mind.
Seems pretty extreme.
No, the Tantra is the result of Lamsa Namsa. It is the natural, I wanted to emphasize that, it is the natural outcome of Lamsa Namsa. Lamsa Namsa is a seed, you plant it, you put all the water, heat, good fertilizer, and what comes up is Tantra. And you can't stop it once you've got all the heat, fertilizer, water, good seed. You know, you couldn't stop it if you wanted to. You can stand there and say, don't come up. You know? And then if you stand there in front of a desert and beg this thing to come up, it cannot come up. It will never come up. Tantra is a natural outcome of knowing the Lamsa Namsa. It will just come. You will experience it. It will happen to you. But not without those three principal paths. Impossible.
Michael,
is this
secret? Can this also be in the sense of
self-secret?
In other words, providing
right
in
your... In a way, it's secret by
definition,
yeah.
I mean, not only that you're not given the teachings...
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. If you don't have Lamsa Namsa...
You hear it, and
you don't hear it. You it'll always be a secret. Really, you'll hear everything and nothing will happen. And you know many people who've gone to many, many initiations.
So then...
just nothing happens.
So then, why is it secret? It's secret because people who don't have Lamsa Namsam might try to interpret it anyway. Isn't that correct?
Well, why is it secret?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I never studied it. All right. Second quality.
Did you say the Tantra had secret open sections? That was a
no. No. The whole Buddhist word is secret. What we call Dhamma, Sutra, and Tantra.
Okay. And all the Tantra is secret. No open.
Tantra means secret. The word means secret.
I thought like action Tantras and such were just taught openly.
They teach them openly, but
not supposed to.
Not supposed to. Okay. Second quality.
Same to me.
That third one is basic sutra. There's not like subcategory. The third, but it is three. Number three is three basic.
Three groups of sutras, three sections.
Just the second one?
Yeah. Second quality of an authentic teaching that is worth your time.
It seems to me that the first one is assuming sort of too much already. It doesn't...
How so?
Well, I mean, you have to assume that the Buddha is... that those ideas are something that have...
merit.
Some... yeah.
Yeah. That's a question.
Can I say something about that?
Let me say something. There's a section in that we study which is called... Timikirudrupa. It's the second chapter of the Pramanavartika, which is the root logic text composed by Dharmakirti in maybe the 700s. He spends a whole chapter on proving that the Buddha can't lie.
That the Buddha cannot lie.
And all I'd say is this. When you enter Buddhism at the beginning, there's a certain amount of attraction to it. There's something that causes you to get into it. Beyond, you can't know that it's correct before you study it. So there's something that attracts you to it. For me, and I think for most people, it was the teaching that everything is suffering. You know, that was so accurate to my experience, and the teaching that things start to fall apart the minute they start. You know, those two ideas attracted me as a young man. To me, that was such an accurate description of what I had already experienced in my life. That I thought, well, this is worthwhile. This must be worthwhile. And that's all. You have to. There's something that attracted you at the beginning. At the beginning, it's you can't know it's right because you haven't studied it yet.
They're calling the Burning House Sutra. I don't know if it's a sutra. There is a
story
about Buddha. Yeah, Buddha is really justifying lying, right?
Well, he's so justifying attracting people by saying something that's not
right.
True just to get them to do the right thing at the beginning.
What about Rinpoche taught us that the Buddha taught that, of course, when you first come to something like Dharma, if you knew it already, you wouldn't need the Dharma. So, but on the other hand, you have a certain amount of wisdom to begin with and a certain amount of responsibility. And you check. He said, don't accept what I say on faith. Cook it. You know, cut it, burn it, scratch it. It's like gold, you know, and use your own wisdom. And you come to Dharma with a certain amount of wisdom already. And in fact, I think Rinpoche told me that's why I'm supposed to put my thumbs inside my fingers like that to signify that I'm coming to the Dharma with some wisdom already.
Oh.
Okay, so please say Pandite.
Pandite.
Good.
Good.
Sawa.
Sawa.
Pandite.
Pandite.
Good.
Sawa.
Pandit is a pandit. It's a Sanskrit word that came into Sanskrit.
Into English too, right? Pandit.
Yeah, it means a wise man, a master.
Political pundit on the
news.
Yeah,
that's from the Anglo-Indian.
David Gergen.
Gen means... don't write anything down, help me with it. It means problem, fault, defect. It's what could have crept into the teachings up to the time that they got to us. Well, clarify. Sawa means to clear away, clean them out.
Corruptions.
Kirins. Like...
Impurities or misplaced yachts and tittles.
Corruption.
You talk about textual corruption.
Well, textual and practice. We get a lot of guns going on nowadays, and we're trying to sell with them, supposedly, right now.
Trying to what?
Sell them. Clear them. Try to remove them. It means that in any teaching, you know, certain wrong ideas start to make their appearance. I can give you a few in modern Buddhism, but the idea that nirvana means some kind of nothingness that you reach and you go into nothing. That's not a Buddhist teaching at all. Nirvana is the permanent cessation of your bad emotions. You can attain it right now.
So are you saying then that there are some Buddhist schools that are misrepresenting nirvana, or this is some people who really aren't Buddhist academics who are saying
that's one, and the other one is obviously emptiness. The idea that emptiness means no meaning. The idea that emptiness means nothing has any nature, and therefore you can do whatever you want. It's totally, totally opposite of what is the truth. It's totally wrong. Totally wrong.
Not just here. Some Lama was writing that the six Rehan, you know, when they tend to create fear on you, but it's a psychological state.
That's bullshit too.
That's bullshit.
Yeah,
too.
Complete bullshit.
The what?
That there's no hell. Hell is a psychological state of a human being.
Yeah.
Forget it. Completely wrong.
But how come some teachers will say, well, if you're, you know, you'll either be born in, like, this hot hell, or if you're born as a human, then these circumstances in your human life will prevail.
That's correct.
Well,
but there's been people in this country teaching that those six realms, desire realm, and that hell realm, human realm, that they don't exist, that they're psychological states of the human being. That's completely wrong.
That they're metaphorical. Yeah.
They are not metaphorical. It's completely wrong. It's a gimp. And like that, there's a lot, and they're coming more and more, because lamas are learning English, they come over, they write their own ideas, you know, and it gets strange.
But does that many really half-baked lamas over there?
It's a good question. I mean, are these people really lamas, or they're half-baked lamas at this point, or they're totally not lamas?
There's a lot of Tibetans teaching who don't have any training. They're not referring to the scriptures at all. They don't know any of them.
So they just happen to be
They're just telling you what they think, or what maybe they heard from somebody.
Some uneducated
but
guy.
But they don't have any background in the teachings.
Huh.
They don't have... You find a quotation in some of their books from any Buddhist scripture.
Are these monks and nuns, or are these...
I say just... You can judge for yourself in a few years, okay? You can judge for yourself. I don't have to point out this person. You can judge for yourself. You learn the sutras. And you learn... the Shastras, commentaries, the real commentaries, the real words of the Buddha, as he said them, in the books. And then you can go check out books and you can say, I open up a book nowadays and go, yeah, who are you? Give me a break. You know, you just read one page and you just say, come on, you know. There's no such thing in the scriptures.
It seems so esoteric into a real way.
No, but there's a
like
what you call good feeling. Good feeling, good heart, being nice. That's not the goal. You want omniscience so you can help people. You want a body that doesn't change. You want a dharmakaya and a rupakaya. We studied it. You want to reach total enlightenment so you can help people. It's not that you're going to live in a dirty, mortal, suffering body like this and have a nice attitude or be kind of friendly, you know. No, it's not. And don't let them shortchange you with that. The point of the teaching is to remove your suffering forever, mental and physical. In this life, you can attain a kind of body which will never have suffering again, and a kind of mind which will never have a bad thought, never be upset again, period. Never have any mental suffering again forever. That's the goal. It's not to, you know, we're more friendly than the other religions. No, it's a big trap. It's a big problem. You go for the big time. You get to, you'll be friendly too. No, you will. You really will. Okay, so, Tanditas, which means the great historical masters, must have And in his text, Pavanka says, they must have checked whether or not there are problems in the teaching. They must have ripped it apart, analyzed it, debated, written, argued with each other. Logically, come to the conclusion that this is not part of the teaching. This is some kind of defect which has gotten into the teaching. And I'll tell you something. After you've read three or four of the great books, and then you pick up any other book, you'll spot it. It sticks out. You know, you'll say, no, this is... I read a translation of the Diamond Cutter Sutra the other day, you know. Just ridiculous, you know. And you just pick it up and you say, he wouldn't say that. Yeah, a lot of translating ability later comes from knowing what it's supposed to say. You know, you see something unusual, like the Heart Sutra says, emptiness is colors and shapes. And you say, oh, well, I know it's not. It must be some kind of an allegory or something. And it is. Okay, so, by the way, these are the commentaries. These are the classical commentaries. And they are all in a collection called the Dengyur.
So Pundit's corruption is clear. Pundits have cleared kept the texts clear of corruption?
The teachings.
The teachings.
Yeah, clean. They are constantly reviewing, constantly analyzing, constantly comparing it with what is known to be pure, and they are doing the process of what we're doing tonight. We're trying to isolate ideas that have crept into so-called Buddhism that don't belong to Buddhism at all.
And then they get rid of them.
Publish their results.
But then, is this like an example of different schools, for instance, that, you know, there's an idea that crept in and some people adhered to it, and what's the famous Kamala Shila, I think, is the one that Rinpoche talks about, and somebody tried to disprove that person, and then that was found to be not correct.
Yeah, that's a good example, but the famous debate, probably it's in the 9th century, I think, or 10th century, an Indian master wanted to teach what emptiness really was, which is a lack of cause and effect, a lack of cause and effect. And a Chinese master wanted to say that emptiness means nothing. And when you meditate on emptiness, the point is to just clear your mind, peaceful, let it float into the void. And they debated it in the court of the king of Tibet, and Kamala Shila won. And the Chinese was, his name was Huashang, and he was banned, and those teachings were banned from Tibet.
They were banned.
They were not allowed to be taught. This very, very bad view, this poisonous view, that emptiness means, nothing. Okay. Danger. Ten means... Ten means commentaries of a human being. I'm giving it that way. It doesn't. Technically, that could be works like the Tibetan works are not in the Dengyur, but they're certainly giving some. But I'm just giving you the prime example of this would be the Dengyur. Den means commentaries written by a human being, as opposed to a Buddha. Gyur, you know already what. What was the Gyur and Kangyur?
Translated.
These are the translated classical commentaries by early Indian masters. Nagarjuna, Asanga, Vasubandhu, Dharmakirti, Chandrakirti, Aryadeva. These are the great commentaries of early Buddhism.
And so are you saying the Tengyur, the commentaries, are the sort of tearing apart and analyzing of the Buddha's word?
Incredible. And then you have a whole lineage of commentaries up to the things we will study, which are written in the 17th century, 18th century.
So since we're relying so much upon the masters to tear apart, analyze, and validate, Buddhist teachings, what is the likelihood of the masters having incorrect view, flawed analysis, etc., and that creeping in?
Well, there are books written about that subject. In fact, I just sent one to the publisher today in Tibetan. There's a whole study of that subject, and you'll get to it. We'll spend a lot of time on it.
My question is it likely that a lot of that has happened? And what is the Buddhist teaching where the masters have incorrectly...
Are they really scrutinizing the Buddhist teaching, or are they scrutinizing the bodies of text that were available at the time that they were alive to see if it was the Buddhist teaching or not?
Both. But also just what accords with Buddhist practice, which fits the third thing which I'm going to tell you about. But basically, you'll see that the great teachers of Buddhism have actually taken slight... Asanga, for example, taught the mind-only school. He did not accept the mind-only school. He is the founder of the mind-only school. He didn't believe the mind-only school. He didn't accept the mind-only school. He wrote all the books for the mind-only school. Okay.
Did he, change his mind later?
No,
or
he wrote them while he was already a Madhyamika.
And this was for people who couldn't deal with Madhyamika?
For people who needed that particular teaching, he taught it. His brother, Vasubandhu, was not a Vaibhashika. He was not an Abhidharmist, but he wrote the book for the benefit of people who couldn't handle the higher teaching. So we'll get to that. Very interesting. Okay. What's the third quality? We'll do the third quality and we'll take a break. By the way, I want to give you just some idea of the contents of the Tengyur. Tengyur contains about 3,400 works. 3,400 separate works.
Works being books, verses?
Treatises. Some of them take up 1,000 pages. Some of them take about 3 pages. They are contained in about 216 volumes, something like that. Depends on the edition.
Did you say 3,400 or 1,000?
3,400.
What's the third? Can we guess at it then?
Hang on a second. I'll give you some of the contents of the Tengyur. Okay. You're not going to get quizzed on it, just for your own information. The first big section of Tengyur is Tantra. Commentaries on Tantra. In there you'd get Naropa's commentary, for example. And then the perfection of wisdom, which is the lower of the two Madhyamika schools. So basically the Tengyur, already in the Tengyur you see the four great schools of Buddhism. And that's what you're going to study in the next 5 years. You're going to study the four great schools of ancient Buddhism.
Is the perfection of wisdom the same as the Prajnaparamita in the Kangyur? It's a commentary on it.
Same name. Slightly different meaning.
Yeah.
By the
means and
middle,
what is it?
Middle way philosophy. Madhyamika. The word Madhya comes from Sanskrit. It came into English as medium. Middle. The word
so
middle
means,
comes from
the so second term. Middle child? Maybe she was the
no,
second
no.
child.
Is the second turn of the wheel? I don't remember.
We'll study it. In fact, it'll be in the second course. We're going to study it. The three turnings of the wheel. When did the Buddha teach Madhyamika? When did he teach the next category is Dodo, which is commentaries on the sutras. Direct Dodo, which means they take a specific sutra and they explain it. For example, you would get in there, you would get a Sangha's commentary to the Diamond Cutter Sutra, for example. Kamala Shila's commentary to the same.
So the tantric section would be just commentaries on the tantra in general? As
yeah, by the way, the tantric section is huge. It's 2,000 volumes. 2,000 works are just devoted to tantra.
Right, but they're not on any specific tantra.
No, they are. Yeah, there'll be like 20 commentaries on the Kalachakra tantra.
Oh, I see. When you say commentaries on sutras, you mean commentaries on open teachings of the Buddha.
Right.
And then the tantras, the tantric commentaries are commentaries on closed teachings of the Buddha.
Right.
Okay.
Next is the mind-only school, okay, Semtan, Chittamatra. very, very, very interesting. That is the incredible presentation of... how karma is stored in your mind. Very interesting. Next is Abhidharma. Abhidharma is the lowest school of the four, and we're going to spend some good time on that. Because their presentation, for example, of karma is unequal. Their presentation of karma is accepted by everybody. Their presentation of the vows is the system that we go by. Monks in the Tibetan tradition, we follow the
vows of morality.
The whole Vinaya comes from the Himayana. And then you get the actual Vinaya, commentaries on Vinaya. Then you get birth stories, Kirab, which are, they're called birth stories. These are the Jataka. These are the, what happened in the former lives of the Buddha. The birth stories. And what did he do?
When he gave himself to the tigers.
That's in a sutra called the Golden Light Sutra. Subhana Prabhupada. It's beautiful. Fantastic. That was the first thing we ever read in these classes, but like 12 years ago.
Michael, in this book they say that Buddha took 3 long years to prepare himself to this. So how come a tantric student can be liberated, but it's different to be liberated and to become a Buddha?
No. Full Buddha with tantra in this life. Equivalent to 10 to the 60th power times 3.
Well, maybe it's, you don't mean to say that the Buddha completed this Buddhahood without tantra, did he?
Without what?
Tantra.
He did.
3 eons.
Anyway, here we go. Next are epistles, letters. And those, for example, Nagarjuna's letter to the king, Nagarjuna's friendly letter. These are letters, that small verse works that famous scholar pandits wrote to kings, for example. The next category is called pramana, and that means logic. Logic. The study of logic and perception. It's incredible. You will really enjoy it. How do you see things? You know, how do you image things? What's the nature of it? This is what we started getting into today. When we get there, you'll have all your answers. Okay?
I'll believe it when I image it.
A monk spends 18 years. We spend about 3 months a year. We stop all our other studies and we just do logic and perception for 3 months. And in the final months, you do it like 16 hours a day. You're debating about 12 hours a day. And it's incredible. You'll really like it. Next are Drado. Then you get into what we call the minor sciences of Buddhism. Drado means the study of Sanskrit. This is not, again, this is now out of the spiritual realm. These are the technical books. Okay? Dado are the old Hindu scriptures on how to read Sanskrit. It's Panini's grammar. Then you get Sorigpa, which means the medical scriptures. The great books on medicine. Then you get Sorigpa, which is the great books on the fine arts. Painting, sculpture, constructing mandalas, constructing stupas. Very interesting stuff.
Sorry.
As opposed to sorry, which is medicine.
So that's like the 5 sciences.
Yeah, now we get to the minor sciences. Yeah. Then you have Tumongwe Luki Denja, which means these are treatises which are accepted by both Buddhists and non-Buddhists. Examples, there's a Ratna Sutra, how to evaluate gemstones. There's a sutra, there's a lot of shastras on how to run a government, things like that. And that's basically it. There's a few other sections. But I just want to give you an idea of the structure. There are some non-Buddhist texts in the Tengyur. But when I say Tengyur, I'm referring only to the Buddhist sections. There are Hindu grammar texts. The Rig Veda, the Vedas are in the Tengyur. Yeah, they're called Rigchen. Very interesting. There's sections of Rigche in the Tengyur. and the ancient, some of the ancient, like Dandi, the great poetry, the Kavya, the fantastic Sanskrit poetry is in there. Megaduta, if you've ever read it.
What's his name?
Dandi. Yeah, like incredible poetry, like, what do you call it? Like the Odyssey.
Why would those kinds of works be included in the thing?
Just because it's considered desirable after you finish your spiritual studies to learn some of those things that you can be more effective. If you could build a good stupa, you'd be a more effective Buddhist. But you're not allowed to study those until you finish your philosophical studies and your tantric studies.
And you can relate to people better too if you're more.
Yeah, if you know
poetry.
I mean, how to make a nice government? I mean, is that like because people ask good Buddhists how to do that if they're renowned enough?
There's
so this is like the orthodox view of making governments.
No, not it's not a Nambe. Sorry, there's no fun. I mean, there is a fun, but you can't pick it up.
It's not something that the Buddha taught about making governments. It's the impression that the people who follow the Buddha would have about making.
It's a Hindu work on how to run a good government.
Not Buddhist.
No. But it was just considered a literary classic at the time and included in
this is to make great scholars,
useful to know.
Good at cocktail parties or something?
You were going to guess number three.
It seems like a lot of cultural and social thing that mixed up.
At the end. No, there's a specific dividing line. These are the non-Buddhist sciences. Okay, or there are sciences which are Tumoa. Tumoa means, they know how to build stupas and we know how to build stupas and we both agree on how to build stupas. What do you guess is number three?
That it works for people.
Yeah.
That it works.
That's true.
That it has a result.
That's what it is.
Like, what was it? I mean, do people really learn or read the entire Kengyur and Tengyur nowadays?
I mean, in practice, a Buddhist monk who, forget the layman, they read as much Buddhist literature as Christian Americans read Christian commentaries. Really, they will never go beyond a few basic works.
Tibetan.
Present company excluded.
Yeah. But monks will rely on the monastic textbook presentation of the five great books, which represent the four great schools, which explain the whole Kangyur.
Which we're going to use, right?
They'll just work, they'll concentrate their whole life on those five books.
But that's still not all the Tengyur and Kangyur, is it?
Not at all. It's five works out of the 4,500. But they will memorize those five, they will learn them from top to bottom, and once you know those, you can read anything in the Kangyur and Tengyur.
And understand it.
Yeah.
There's a Rosetta Stone of the Tengyur and Kangyur.
And that's exactly what you're going to study in these 5 years. That's the whole point. I'm just simplifying it.
Realization.
Yeah. Now you recognize realization, right? Pogba?
Okay, Siddha?
Dupa means Siddha. Siddha. It's the Dup in Dundu. It's the Siddha in Siddhartha.
Like a musical. It's the Siddha.
Dupa means practitioner, master practitioner, realized practitioner. Sage? What do you want to call it? I don't know. Wangchuk is, I think, Indra, and it means someone who has total control over something. Okay, Dupe Wangchuk means like a lord,
lordly
of practice.
Lord of practice.
Okay? I mean, a really, really master practitioner.
Sovereign practice.
Okay, a god of practice. He by them, Dopa.
Wangchuk means Indra.
Yeah, I believe so. Or it's Ishvara, maybe. Actually, it's Ishvara.
He is by them?
Yeah. Wangchuk is Ishvara. Okay. So what it means is this.
By them realized?
It has to work. It has to work. If you practice it, it has to work.
It's produced realized beings.
Yeah. This teachings... in the minds of those people who were able to, give it a good shot, It works. It produces realizations in you.
Could you read that?
It produces realized.
Yeah, it is realized by master practitioners. That what he actually says in here is, when master practitioners have gone to class and learned about it, and have gone home and contemplated it, and then have meditated upon what they concluded by their contemplations, they, in their mind, these realizations occur. It has to be the kind of teaching that if you hear it in a class, and then you go home and think about it carefully, and then you get some conclusion like, okay, yeah, renunciation is correct. I think I better try to get it. When you actually meditate on it, you get it, and it helps you. It liberates you. And that in itself eliminates a lot of teachings going around. And you can do it for 1,000 years, and no dhokpa will come. Just nothing will ever happen. And you've experienced that. It's like a car with no ignition. You know, it looks like a dharma teaching, but when you try it, nothing happens. And it's happened to you. You've tried things like that. I do. If you meditate on renunciation with a sincere effort for, you know, 3-4 weeks, something should happen. Your viewpoint should start to change. And in a way that makes you more peaceful, actually. It will. You will be less vulnerable to the ups and downs at work, for example. You know, one day you think you're this, and the next day they moved your desk over there, and you come back and they give you an award, and the next day the boss yells at you, and you know, you get confused. You'll become more able to. Those things will occur. They will still occur. Your state of mind will become different if you have renunciation. Okay, what time is it? You gotta take it.
5 to 9.
Okay, sorry. Let's start at 9. I have 3 small things to give you, and then we'll be done. I don't want you to do your homework. But,
No.
What's half?
No, Lord.
Okay, three qualities of a real teacher, of something that's worth practicing. Okay. If it doesn't have those 3, forget it. Don't waste your time. You don't have much time. You're gonna die.
Can you say that last sentence one more time?
Yeah. Jupe wang shuki dopa. It should have been. Those things, that teaching should have been internalized or realized by the Lord practitioners, meaning the great practitioners of time, of all time.
That the great practitioners should have practiced it, and it worked for them.
Yeah. It should have brought...
Oh, that it has produced great lords, yeah. I would think.
No, that's not what the text says.
It's not in the book.
In Tibet?
In English?
Yeah, it's in the English. It's coming. It's in your reading this week.
So they practiced it because they were great lords and they could see the difference, or it produced great lords out of them by practicing it?
The grammar says great lords have realized it. It probably also
implies...
Well,
then that means that they were great lords before then. Right?
It probably also implies that realizing it also made them great lords. That's not the grammar of the book. Obviously. Okay. It's the first line on page 19, which is the next last page in your notebook. The commentary runs 70 pages, and I'm not handing it all out because it overworks my laser printer. And I was waiting for people to drop out. So I wouldn't have to print the whole thing like 30 times.
That's what happened to that strategy.
Since working on it.
People told me they're getting tired, but just bust your ass, okay? It's 6 weeks. You'll survive. I'm surviving. I'm doing 7 classes a week. You're doing 2. Yeah, you're about a third of the way through. Come on. No, really. I mean, just suck it in, you know? Just be exhausted for 6 weeks. That's all right. And then you will have about a month and a half off. I'm going to India. I'm going to Russia.
So in other words, when we get tired, we should buy you tickets.
No, I mean, go ahead and get exhausted. You got 6 weeks to recover. Then it'll be winter time. It'll be fresh.
Which is next
Halloween.
When does the next series start?
Around the next series will start around mid October.
October.
Good.
We have it.
2 months. Yeah.
We'll be gone the very first week in October. Yeah.
In Mogadishu.
Oh, that doesn't sound like a great place to...
Just kidding. Okay, I gotta rush because I have a lady who's gonna walk out at me. Please say surname. London.
London.
Dunyerwa.
Dunyerwa.
Nyambone.
Nyambone.
One more time. Surname.
Surname.
London.
London.
Dunyerwa.
Dunyerwa.
Nyambone.
Nyambone.
This is from a commentary by Aryadeva, who is after Nagarjuna, the greatest. He was the great teacher of emptiness, Madhyamika, right after Nagarjuna. Yeah. We don't know a lot about these early lamas, aside from their works. We don't know much about their lives. I mean, it was like 1700 years ago, 17 centuries ago. But he's the great. He wrote a book called The 400 Verses.
Is that where this is from?
Yeah. He wrote a book called 400 Verses on emptiness. And it's an incredible book. He's recognized as the second great lama, the second great scholar of the Madhyamika lineages. The first is Nagarjuna.
400 Verses or 400 Verses on emptiness?
Something like that. Call him Master. And he, in this line and a half, which is chopped out of a verse, he defines the qualities of a good student. We already had three qualities that you shouldn't have, right? Remember? What are they?
To be pot.
Yeah, to be pot problems.
Yeah. Don't smoke it, don't roll it, and don't grow it.
That's a negative, okay? That's how not to listen to Dharma. These are the qualities of a good student. So we've had the qualities of a good teacher, we've had the qualities of a good teaching, and now we have the qualities of a good student. Surne. Sur comes from a word meaning corner. That's a sur. There's another sur. Ne means to stay in the corner. But what it means is to keep a neutral position. You're not holding, you're not biased. You don't have preconceptions. You're staying open-minded. You're open-minded. You don't have a preconception about what Buddhism should be when you come into Buddhism class. You're not, I mean, I get that sometimes. I start to teach a class and the guy says, no, that's not, I'm in this, you know, and I, okay, well, then why'd you come? You know? Okay, surne means you're what's the word?
You've not painted yourself into a corner.
Yeah, okay. In the monastery, for example, surne means there'll be a dispute in the monastery. And they'll pick a few monks who are always known to be surne.
Impartial,
that's good.
Mm-hmm. So, sur means corner, ne means?
To stay. Impartial.
Oh, that's good.
You don't come into the teaching with a lot of ideas that you've carried baggage. And you're going to interpret it your way. Okay?
But not your own teacher.
Something like that. Impartial, open-minded, ready to listen to them. Okay? Longden. Longden means intelligent. Okay? Intelligent.
No, a woman named Longden, is it spelled out like that?
Yeah. It is a fact. To liberate yourself, you have to be able to think well. You have to be one of those 1% of humanity who can think clearly and on a difficult question and come to a conclusion and live your life based on an intellectual conclusion that you've made. It's very difficult.
Be able to put up with the other 99%.
He became London. I mean, he became a genius.
But it appeared
like something. No, not. If you read the whole story, it's interesting. I mean, towards the end, there's a great debate.
I didn't hear that.
I mean, basically, you're going to have an intellectual understanding of emptiness. that's going to have to prove to you why morality is correct to do. And then despite your own instincts, and despite the culture you grew up in, and despite everything around you, you're going to have to be moral out of knowledge. And that takes an intelligent person. That takes you bucking the whole trend of your culture. You're being moral. You are not ever going to lie because you know absolutely what causes suffering. Because things are empty. That whole thing is going to rule your life. And that's an intellectual understanding. At first it's coming right out of your intellect, right out of your brain. You have no instincts to do that. Your understanding of philosophy is going to have to rule your instincts. And then you can become liberated. So it's hard. Lombe. Dunyerwa. Dunyerwa means you aspire towards high things. You want high things. Okay, dunyerwa means aspire or have higher goals. Like that.
It's not just aspiring, it's excelling in your aspirations.
Aspiring towards some high spiritual goal. You do not, you're not satisfied with the house, car, and you've got your, and you're willing to put out the effort. It implies that also. It's going to be some pain, it's going to take some late nights, it's particularly when you practice, when you're trying to develop a new attitude, like renunciation, as we were talking about upstairs. There's a lot of rough moments, you know? There's times when you're not quite ready yet, and you're trying to do it, and you have delicious failures, you know what I mean? You think you're doing pretty good, and then you really screw up. And you get big disappointments, and you get big setbacks. It takes 10 years sometimes to change one of your attitudes. And it's very hard, and you need to nyewa. You got to put out the effort. You got to have the guts to keep going. Nyambo means to hear. To hear the Dharma.
To hear the Dharma is implied, or Nimbo means to hear Dharma?
No, just hearing, which always means to hear the Dharma in Buddhism. Shruti in Sanskrit. And Na means proper vessel. A proper vessel. This person is worthy to study Dharma. He's impartial, he comes in with an open mind. He's intelligent enough to understand what's being said and to let his intelligence, let his intellect, let his understanding rule his behavior. And then he has dunyerwa. He can keep going even when it gets rough. He has that aspiration to some high goal, and he's not going to get he'll get discouraged, but he's not going to give up. He'll keep going. And that's dunyerwa. Those are three qualities that a student needs.
Can you put that in one sentence now?
It's in the book.
It's yeah. In the book.
That's the sentence in the book.
So the book is a book.
By the way, the verb is understood, as so often in Sanskrit and Tibetan. A proper vessel for study is a person who is impartial, intelligent, and who strives.
So is that saying a proper vessel to hear the Dharma?
Yeah. You're on to homework 4. Yeah, see, you're a third of the way through. Pass this around. Pedro, you get it first back. Ready to do more? One, two. Oh, kind of.
Should we wait until or should we?
By the way, the homework at the bottom says, memorize the title of the book and the first line. That's this page right here, the one with the skinny verses on it. It's the first Tibetan page in your notebook. The first fully Tibetan page in your notebook.
So we're supposed to memorize that page in Tibetan?
No. Not fully. This line and this line. And I'm going to give you the
transliteration.
Yeah, now if they don't make you memorize the sounds, yes.
Not the characters.
No, not the characters. You guys are exempt from the characters. If if it really overloads you, you can memorize the English, okay? If you feel yourself getting stressed out and you're going to quit or something, don't, okay? Memorize the English. I don't mind. It's in the book.
The top line's the title?
When I get done with the title, I'll stop. In fact, I'm going to shorten it for you. That's the title. We'll go over the meaning next week, and this is a typical way for a Tibetan student to learn. You memorize the line first, and then you're very, very ripe to hear it explained.
What is that? The first line.
Next week.
Yeah, but we need to memorize it in English. If this turns out above me,
if you're going to do the English, it's just the three principal paths by Jetsu Kappa.
That we're going to do that next week.
And then the bold part on page 38, right in the middle of the page. One short line.
I bow.
I bow down to all the high
bold lines. The bold part on page 38 is which is the first sentence.
That is the opening line of this work that Tsongkhapa has written called The Three Principal Paths. It's a very, very important line.
Michael, Arya Deva's 400 verses is where the three requirements of the student are found. The previous three about the teachings, where did they come
from?
It's
in chapter 1 of this commentary, and I'm not sure where it's from.
Which of this commentary?
Yeah,
that's just out of this commentary.
It's from
the opening lines
I'll say the pronunciation. Yes.
It's Jetsun Chukyi Gyalpo Tsongkhapa Chenpu Zepe Lam Pizo Namsu. And the next line says Jetsun Nama Namla Chakta Lo.
You don't read anything from this.
The syllabus tells you what to read. I think it's up to 56.
It's 59 to 90.
Let me check.
Are we on the week 3 renunciation?
Oh, wasn't that this?
I had 40 to 56.
Oh, I read that.
This is
let me check something.
Here it is.
Week 3. This is week 2.
Sort of
kind of
halfway.
We're at week 2.
Yeah. Tonight was the second half of week 2.
Thursday is the first class of this
training. Yeah, you only have
so
to.
One third of the way. Precisely one.
Page 56.
Yeah, you only have to read up to page 56.
Okay.
For next class. Is that you?
No.
I'm very
so much.
Not really. Okay.
Very sad.
No, thank you. No, I like it. Okay. I'll tell him too. He's still got two days off. Good night. Sorry to keep you so late. I don't know how I can make it shorter.
I'd like to say, for my part, I'm willing to put in extra time, you know, to get the thorough information. So.
Yeah.
I don't know how everybody else feels.
Well,
you
actually, I'm going to go as long as I like.
I'd envision it for a long time for the extremes.
Yeah. That's one thing that can make it stop on time. And I'll try to control it. In the monastery, the lama just says, shut up.
can you use a different hole punch, like maybe the one that the class bought?
If you need your hole punch, then Tom.